Welcome to IT Live, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. The power run game, what does it all mean? That's what we're discussing today. Texas Homer here, Ian Boyd as well. Good morning, Roaster. Sandman, Ian's going to be so energetic today, I can feel it. Down in his plums. Eastbound and Down. Legendary show. Do you ever watch Eastbound and Down?
No, I've seen a lot of the clips, though.
I was going to say, you can just watch outtakes on YouTube.
It's a meme. It seems like it's just a meme factory.
It is, dude. It's a hilarious show.
I do love that guy on Tropic Thunder.
Yeah. Yeah, Danny McBride. Okay, so we know that Texas is moving to a more power run focus. We talked about, I think it was on like a show last week, we talked power run doesn't necessarily mean what we think it means. It's an actual type of scheme, and we're going to talk about that scheme and why we chose it over our outside zone, inside zone kind of stuff. Splendid day to get to see you. Chris Harrington continues. Yep. The Ashley Schaefer scenes, baby. All right. So what does it mean for Texas to become a gap scheme running team? We have a couple of diagrams, and I also pulled a couple of counter runs from the Ohio State game that we can watch as well.
Did you?
I did.
Texas ran gap games against Ohio State?
Like three. Like three, and one of them gets completely shut down and does not work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I'm going to find counters pretty easily, you know, just thinking because counters are common runs. And no, there's like three all game. One of them is demolished.
Sark only ran them often enough to credibly sell play action.
Yep. So, like, he would do it just so he could pull the guard or whatever out to protection. Or run a lot of RPOs where it was almost always throwing the RPO. It was interesting. All right, Ian, what are gap schemes?
Let's try it like this. Gap schemes are down blocks, kick out block, lead block in between.
Okay.
So you're parting the defense by blocking down this way, usually pulling a guy, but not necessarily, blocking him this way, kicking out a single guy that way, and then leading through the intended gap. With another blocker. So in a lot of gap schemes, you pull two blockers. Like this one would be like the Gus Malzahn power spread play. Tom Herman ran this when they had Andrew Beck. Mm-hmm. They did not run it as much when Beck was replaced with like Kate Brewer and Andrew Latow, right?
Yeah.
Jared Wiley. Because the hard part of this is you get the down blocks on the tackle with the offensive tackle on the guard, and then they watch that. They try to block him and watch down to get to the weak side linebacker, the W.
Yep.
Blocking down on the nose, blocking down on the backside end. Pull the guard to lead, but that fullback has got to get inside of that defensive end and get low on him and drive him out so that the ball can go in between. Or if not driving him out, getting him turned and twisted, trying to beat the block in such a way that the running back can like bounce outside or something.
Yeah. So in power, the running back is going to follow this guard. This guard's going to come through the B gap. So the runner's going to try to hit the B gap ideally. So the guard's going to pull out. Well, this is power. So the fullback right here, F, is going to take the kick out block on the end, and then the guard on the right side is going to pull around, and he's going to go get that M, that Mike. The tackle, the left tackle, is going to double team on the defensive tackle with the guard on the left side, and then one of them is going to work to the weak side backer, like Ian says. But the point of what I want you guys to know, we're not going to talk duo. If you don't know scheme and you just want to understand what's going on in the game at a glance, in a run game, when you see a guard pull, it's going to be a power or a counter. So that's what you want to see. If everyone moves right or moves left, disregarding split zone, moves right or moves left, it's going to be a zone blocking scheme most of the time. When you see someone pull like that, immediately your brain should think it's a power scheme. It can be counter or actual power, but that's a quick way to identify it as a fan if you are not aware of schematics.
And the more popular way to do this is counter. So you would go
you would switch roles.
You'd switch roles, you'd run it to the right side, block, go back.
You want to actually look at power?
Yeah.
Okay.
You'd block down on that nose and try to get to the Mike linebacker, and then the left guard would pull and he'd kick out that defensive end, and then the fullback would lead.
And the fullback would lead up to the second level. So why would you do that, Ian?
Because your fullback in most offenses is not a fullback. He's a off-ball tight end, and he may or may not be Conan the Barbarian in the box as a blocker.
So it's a bad matchup with a 6'4", 250-pound defensive end on a receiving tight end. So it's better to switch and have the tight end player go up to the Mike linebacker because those body types are far more similar.
Yeah, and it's just a it can help you if you can make counter and like something else that's easy on the tight end a bigger part of your run game, then you can get away with playing the receiving tight end. Yeah. So like Jeff Lebby is really good at this, and he'll build his run games with like insert zone, like ISO basically, but like zone with like that fullback player leading up on a linebacker, or counter, or unbalanced, or zone read. And he'll just do all kinds of stuff to make sure that his tight end can be more of a receiving athlete and not have to be Conan. He's pretty good at it. Sark has a lot of tricks too, but Sark also wants to be able to smash people in the mouth at some point, and so it's not the same.
It's not the same. Okay, so this is counter. When we talk about power, we also mean counter. I know it's a little confusing because there's a play called power and a play called counter. They're both power runs. Anytime you're pulling somebody to get a numbers advantage to the play side, falls in the power category. So what's the difference here? What does this mean? Well, were we not running counter last year?
We ran a little of both. Probably a lot more counter. But Sark loves counter also for play action. Because the guard, you can go to the next one. This actually counter. The guard is like pulling over to kick out the end on the bottom. And so if this is a play action play down the field rather than a RPO like I drew here, then it's not a bad block for the guard to pull around and hit the edge who's trying to rush the edge and then just guide him upfield. Like it usually looks kind of precarious when you notice it live, but it's usually pretty easy for the guard to get him upfield and the quarterback can step up and throw down the field. So it's a feasible pass block when it's counter. And then it just really distorts the defense, because when they see a pulling guard, they're like, I gotta get down there.
Correct. So why what is the value there on play action? What are our linebackers triggering? Like how does
everybody's triggering? When you see a guard pull, you're like, I gotta get over there. Because if I don't go over there and help blow this play up quick, then they're gonna have that lineman or others releasing downfield and finding me in space when I'm trying to get to the ball.
They're also gonna have numbers.
They're going to have numbers. So they're going to blow open a hole and somebody's going to run me over in the open field. The running back, a lineman, the pulling guard, somebody. I'm going to be in a bad spot where I need to make a selfless decision or a business decision, you know?
Yeah.
And also even just setting aside personal well-being, like more to your point, they're moving numbers to the other side. And if you actually want to win and stop them, then you got to have numbers there too. So it triggers more than zone. Zone just does not move gaps the same way as power in the same quick hitting nature. And in the same aggressive nature where it's like literally a guard, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's always been good for RPOs and play action. The whole, I used to call the style of spread offense that was built around RPOs and power run schemes, just smash mouth spread. So Chad Morris was kind of a leading figure there. And the Art Briles offense works that way. And Levy's offense kind of works that way.
What do you think about Riley at OU? I haven't watched him again at USC, but the Trey counter, Y counter was kind of a staple of Riley.
He took things to another level, I think. Yeah. But he didn't use RP. He doesn't has typically not used RPOs as much. Yeah. Although he will play action the crap out of you. So there's still that dimension.
Yeah. So when we're thinking about run schemes, we're not just thinking of what it can do for us in the run game. It has downstream effects on our passing game in two major ways, like Ian stated. The play action. So this guard pulls. These linebackers are trained to key, not as so much anymore because they're getting tricked so often on it, but traditionally a linebacker is keyed in at looking at the guard, and if that guard pulls, they know to trigger down. Well, if they know that guard pulls and they trigger down, now you've taken at least one, maybe two linebackers out of pass coverage. So there's advantages there too. And then what Ian has noted down here, what I think is interesting is you also have this RPO angle as well. And you'll also have a Arch Manning can pull it angle too. So you have with one run play here, you theoretically can throw the RPO play action. You can run it straight up with the running back or Arch. There's variations where Arch can pull it. So this one play has four potentialities. And that's tough on a defense. Can you explain the RPO side of it? Yeah.
So you're pulling guys from the left side of your line to the right. And if that nickel is the player that the defense likes to use to help squelch that, they're just going to bring him off the edge unblocked. Then Connor thinking of IPAs. That's hilarious.
I actually don't like IPAs.
Okay. I was gonna ask, but I just don't want to derail. All right, if they like to bring that nickel off the edge to outnumber that, then it's the easiest thing in the world to just flip a bubble screen or either a now screen out there to make them pay. Right. Then they're outnumbered, the free safety has to run downhill, and then he starts triggering too hard, and then you do the one where you fake the screen and then the H runs down the field on a wheel and you throw it to him and he's wide open. Texas does that to people all the time. This is actually just a real simple either or for the quarterback. So he just like puts the ball down in the running back's belly and he looks at that nickel. And usually the way you would tell guys to do it is if the nickel hesitates at all to go fit the run, then you hand it off and you've already gained your numbers advantage.
Yeah.
Some teams are really aggressive. Like Joe Burrow, they were like, if you can throw it, throw it. And he's like, if I can throw it.
Which is 100% of the time in Joe Burrow.
I think I can throw it a lot. So if you're telling me that, be sure. And they're like, if you can throw it, throw it. And Joe Burrow would throw stuff. Like if there was any window at all, he was throwing.
Yeah.
And he was hitting it. And he was sick. A lot of times now, you can like have the guys run the screen. But teams just don't like to fit with the nickel as much as they used to. So you have the other example handy?
Yep.
The other one that's maybe a little more common is for that strong safety to come down instead. And the nickel would just like stay on the slot, stay on the screen, stay home. And that strong safety would sneak down in the box. And then like maybe the Mike and the Will could run outside and turn the ball back in and have the strong safety backfilling. And the run fit. When you deem that to be the threat, then you have the quarterback, you know, put the ball down for the running back, and he reads that safety. So he's reading now. Is he staying home? Can I fit that skinny glance, that skinny post over his head, or do I hand off?
And if he comes and fits the run, man, you can potentially have a touchdown here.
Yes.
Now one on one with the corner with inside leverage.
This one is trickier. Because the strong safety can potentially like feign like he's coming down and then like get back, get his hands up, whatever. And you got to throw like a real feathery ball to get it in there. You know, that can be tricky. Some teams only do it if that strong safety is like all the way down next to the wheel. And otherwise they're like, we'll see if he can run and tackle or not. And we'll hand off. Then the other problem is that when you're like hesitating and then you're throwing it over the middle like this, you can get batted passes at the line of scrimmage. So some easy examples that might be top of mind for people. The Quinn Ewers spring game pick six was on this exactly. I don't know if it was a counter, but it was a run scheme with a glance behind the strong safety. And Quinn got tipped by Ethan Burke. I think it was counter because the guard had trouble getting out to Ethan Burke and he got up and he got his hands up. And then it was a pick six for Alfred Collins. Quinn had a whole bunch of these get tipped trying to throw this exact glance. And Texas did a lot of damage to A&M's hopes and dreams in College Station, batting down a few of Marcel Reed's attempts to make the same throw. So this one's kind of hard. If you can just get them to hesitate, you've already created an advantage for your run game. So,
yeah, you don't always have to pass it.
Yeah.
All right, guys, before we keep going, let's hear from Academy Sports and Outdoors.
Days like this, the anticipation's half the fun. The call to adventure. Possibilities in every direction.
Look at that.
The stories you'll bring back. Right. Even the true ones. And always, already, you can't wait until next time. From first catch to biggest catch of the season, this is where it starts. Academy Sports and Outdoors. Have fun out there.
Okay, so this is the new emphasis. And keep in mind, when we say, like, Texas is a power run team, this is a game of percentages. So you're still going to have outside zone, inside zone. It just means, like, you go from running counter 25% to 45%. So you're still going to have the varied run schemes. You're still going to have our sweeps, all of that stuff. But it is a different focus. It's a little bit of a different mentality. And it's also, with any blocking scheme or any position ever in football, it's personnel dependent. So why would we go with this as our predominant run scheme? What is it about our players, our experience, all of that, that would lend to choosing this style of attack?
There's like a positive side and a negative side. Let's start with the negative. Executing outside zone, like Texas did last year, is tricky. Zone, actually, the way Texas runs inside zone, that's kind of tricky too. Because Texas doesn't run like Tom Herman inside zone, which is really basically just duo or power. Maybe that's another episode.
Yeah, we don't want to overwhelm.
Yeah, Texas's inside zone is still pretty lateral. Meaning, like, the linemen have to move, like, have to take real lateral steps and coordinate. We're going to move this way. And as we do so, I'm going to block this guy, and then you're going to block this guy, unless they move into this area, and in which case I'm going to hit this guy and trade him to you. And you can see all the time when Texas is trying to run zone schemes, even when they were better at it, you'd see plays where you just see a defender, like, running through the line. And then you'd see a lineman turn around going like, oh.
Or completely whiff, like striking after he's already behind them.
And there's like, I kind of thought, y'all, you hit him. Or like, I guess that was my guy. Or yeah. Like, whoops, I didn't think he was going to do that, you know?
Yeah.
Texas is going to be, well, they're actually going to be pretty old on the interior of the line. Mm-hmm. But they're not going to have the same cohesion and experience in zone that they've had the last couple of years.
They have some maturity. They don't have a ton of game reps together. I know you don't really care about that, but for the traditional.
I think I do. I might for outside zone.
Okay.
Especially if it's not your, like, your whole system, which it's not for Texas. But like, if you watch like 2022, Texas did not run that much zone. There's like duo, counter, gap. Various gap schemes. Those are everything I mentioned was a gap scheme. They ran a little zone, but it was like, let's keep it kind of simple because they had all new young guys. 2023, they mixed in a little more zone. And then by the end of the year, they were actually doing it a lot because they were a lot better at it. 2024, it was like, this is our thing now. We're going to major in outside zone. And it was every year, it was basically the same guys every year, right? Now it's new left tackle, new left guard, new center, same right guard, new right tackle. So four new starters. You could three and a half, depending on how you want to count Cole Hudson. Three and a quarter, depending on how you want to count Trevor Goosby. But they're not, we're kind of belaboring a pretty obvious point. So it's just not a great fit. Then there's this. Jake Majors and Hayden Connor were really good at outside zone, unless it was Georgia or a really good team. Then they were not as good. But like on a weekly basis, they were really good at outside zone. They were not as good in the power game. Hudson, Neto, Ume Azulu, and DJ Campbell are all much more power type linemen. They're athletic. When they pull, they can make deft, sharp movements across the line. They can adjust when the blocker is not where they expected them to be. They can like move their feet to make good contact, and they're powerful. Like Jake Majors was really quick, but he was not powerful. Hayden Connor was really big, but he was not powerful. And like somebody go find, if you don't know what I'm talking about, go find one of Paul Wadlington's lectures on this topic. But strength and power are not the same. Strength is like your ability to maintain high level effort and sustain it. Power is your ability to recruit muscle groups within a very limited period of window of time. So like the vertical jump.
It's speed and strength combined, power.
No, but there's a time component. So like a vertical jump, you can't really train a vertical jump. It's either your brain and your muscles are wired to generate instantaneous explosive movements or they're not. And you or me, white boys, can do a million calf raises and we're still not going to be able to dunk the basketball, right?
Speak for yourself, dude.
Okay. I'll only
speak for yourself, dude.
I'll only speak for myself. Because we're just not built that way. But I have a friend that's like 5'6", that's a dude. And he could dunk in college. He could maybe dunk now. Because he's just different. His brain, neuro, muscle, all the chemistry is different. And Neto and DJ Campbell are like that. We're like they can get there and they can just generate power and hit people and strike them in a different way.
They also have a very aggressive mindset, even from high school. Their temperament in their run game is also different.
Well, you develop that and you're able when you realize you can just go plow people, right?
Right. But it's fun whenever you get to just demolish guys.
Anthony Hill is like that too, where Anthony Hill, it doesn't look like he's necessarily got that much of a lead up on a guy, but then he hits them and they just go, you know, and you're like, whoa, it's different. That's power. And not even the scheme, although it translates to the scheme very cleanly for our purposes. The Splendid Dad is asking, is this fast twitch muscles? This is a better topic for Paul, but fast twitch muscles is a part of it. I don't know if fast twitch muscles relates to, I think that may have to do with like the neuro wiring in those muscles.
There's type one and type two.
Yeah.
And I don't know which is type one or type two, but it's the difference between a sprinter and a marathon runner.
Yes.
Whatever you're predominant in. And yeah, so if you have, I guess they call them fast twitch or whatever, but type one versus type two. And if you have those, that's a component, but it's not 100% of the component.
As another example, I had another friend in college that was like jacked, like actor. He looked like an actor, like all those sorts of muscles and tone that you'd want to see like an actor auditioning for a superhero role.
Yeah.
And we're like, this guy's so strong looking. And he might have been strong at particular movements that he had worked and exercised. But we took him out once to like play disc golf. And he was the worst disc golf player I'd ever seen. Everything he did was slow and clunky, and there was no fluidity and no power to any of it. And we had this other friend that was kind of bigger, but he didn't have like gym looking muscles. And he didn't look like he was going to get the part. He was a good looking guy, but he didn't look like he was going to get the part for Captain America coming out of the tank, right? Like this other guy did. But he was a collegiate athlete at a smaller school. And every sport that we played with him was the easiest thing in the world to him. Just like, hey, yeah, if you want to try this disc golf game, and he's immediately better than almost all of us.
Yeah, that weird friend that can like play darts, baseball, like it doesn't matter what it is, ping pong. Yeah, yeah, they pick it up. But they have that. So basically what we're just saying is Campbell and Ned are better athletes. So
if we weren't trying to fill an hour, yeah, that's better athletes at guard now.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have better athletes at guard. And they have run temperaments too. Like they like to do that. Go watch their high school tape. Neto would block a dude. He would fall to the ground. The guy would look up like maybe he was considering getting back up, and then Neto would just collapse on him again. So they have that kind of killer instinct on top of everything that'll be good in the run game. So we know they can move. I saw DJ Campbell doing something when he was in high school. They were joking around after practice, and he was playing tight end. And I still think he could be the greatest H-back this world's ever seen. But because of that, he was running routes and catching balls. And I was like, this dude is a special athlete.
There's an awesome chance that the transition from zone schemes of move this way and make sure that you hit guys in cohesion with the guys to your right and left, that moving from that to go over there and the first person you see that looks like he could be a threat to the running back, pulverize them.
Yeah.
We may see a very different DJ Campbell. We may finally see five-star DJ Campbell.
Yeah.
Result of that.
All right. So we're running a power scheme because it is more simple in down blocking, pulling, lead, right, than a pure zone. There's so much more understanding, communication, cohesion that can occur with zone. That's why it's a really beautiful play when executed well. But like Ian said, when you're not all on the same page, that guy just broke through the line and you're running back hit 3 yards behind. So that's a big deal. And then on top of that, we have guards that can run and hit and are not fun. You do not want to go heads up with, right?
Yep.
Cool. All right, let's look at
– so, wait, just to wrap up, we're not going to be – we wouldn't be as good at outside zone this year, but we are – would be potentially even more effective in gap schemes. So there's every reason on the offensive line, on the pro and the con, both point to making this switch.
Cool.
Great. That's good summary. Go ahead.
Okay, cool. Let me pull up this here play. All right, let's see what we can do. And then I'm going to make it leave the screen, and then I'm going to have trouble finding it like I always do. It's like my signature move. Somewhere. It's coming. Here we go. Okay, the quintessential Gibson run, power O blocking, and he takes the first inside cut available, gets low, and drives. Okay, so if you guys don't know schematics, all you're looking for here is when you see that guard pull out and run, then you're going to know in your head as a fan they're power running right now. Pull comes up.
See the way that Neto
is that Neto? I was gonna say, that's an aggressive block too. That looks good.
And he had to find him on the move. There's two things going on here for Neto. One is that this is power and it's not counter. So the kick out block is the fullback or the tight end, Juan Davis. So his job is not to kick out on the edge, it's to climb up in the hole that gets created and find the linebacker. Now, but Juan Davis, the way Texas often runs this play when they have a tight end on the edge like that, is it actually goes outside. So the tight end hits the defensive end and ends up just like taking him inside. The defensive end's like, I got to get inside. They're washing everything down. I got to get in there so they can't just take this downhill on us. And Juan Davis, or actually that's not Juan Davis, that's Spencer Shannon. In line. Spencer Shannon in line does a pretty good job here. Yeah, he guides him inside, but now Neto cannot just lead through the obvious hole for the linebacker. Yeah. He's got to see what he can make of the situation right when he gets there, adjust and find the linebacker on the edge. And then he does. And not only does he find him and make good contact on him, but he knocks him back. Right? Were you about to say all that? Go ahead, Connor. Give us what you got.
No, this is exactly what I was going to say. No, I was just saying, pay attention to what this does to the linebackers, right? When we're talking about play action. You see, this is a first and 10. So this is a neutral down. They don't know if it's run or pass. They see that guard pull. Guess what? These linebackers are totally out of the coverage. See, they make them all come down. The safety, let's look at that top safety, top of your screen safety. Let's see if he gets influenced. Oh, they're playing the three high, ain't they? See, this safety triggers immediately. But you just see how that contorts the defense, right? They're very obsessed with these counter type run, or these power type runs, counter type runs, when they see that pull. So we want to see how that changes the personality of the defense, and it brings guys down, it brings linebackers down. And then you see Arch eyeing. He has RPO eyes, right? Because there's an RPO up top here, right? I don't know if they're going to throw it, but you see Arch is looking right here, and then you have the screen. Yeah. So, because you have him sitting here, but that's what's cool, right? So there's different things going on this play, and you tag it with an RPO to give the pass option as well. Watch it one more time. Watch up top. You can pay attention to the RPO option, and then this is Arch, right?
I think so.
It's got to be Arch. Quinn's not built like that. And you watch Arch watching the RPO, so that's a possibility, but he decides to give it. And also important here, Jarrett Gibson's run. You want to see that. If Jarrett Gibson can get contacted here and continue for 4 yards, you want to see that. That's going to be an important thing.
That was Cedric Benson's secret, was that there were so many runs where you're like, that was a waste of time. Oh, it's 2nd and 4?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's a huge asset. And so, yeah, if Gibson can do that for us, you know, I don't need all the wow stuff. I'll take it. Don't get me wrong. But if he can get contacted and fall forward for 4 yards, that's going to make a huge difference for us. All right, guys. Before we keep going, let's hear from David McClellan.
I'm just going to say, guys, you probably need a fiduciary financial advisor. And I've got the guy for you. His name is David McClellan with Forum Financial. He works broadly and deeply with his clients as a financial life coach. And he should know something about coaching because he won several national championships as a swimmer for the University of Texas. He specializes in financial planning and has contributed numerous articles to Kipling on the topic of retirement tax bombs. So contact David today to be your fiduciary financial planner and schedule a 1-hour consultation to assess your financial situations. The free consultation is available, so just give him a call. The number is 312-933-8823. That's 312-933-8823. His email is also in the description below.
All right, dude. Screen's freezing up a little bit, so that's a lot of fun. But I'm trying to pull over here in a second. Premiere. Can you hear me, Ian?
Yeah.
All right, cool. There we go. Finally got it back. Chrome can be fun sometimes. All right. Do you want to? Well, we can hit your other article real quick. Let me see. Or we can go. You want to look at some Ohio State examples?
Let's look at the Ohio State examples.
Okay. This might have been very dumb for me to say because I'm trying to get stuff pulled up. Okay. Ian, talk to the people while I pretend to not be doing this.
Yeah. Sorry, I just got a distracting text message.
Yeah, good. We were talking about Gibson's run game prior.
It's not just the offensive line that this impacts when you run gap schemes versus zone schemes. Each scheme also can ask different things of the running back, which is probably maybe least important. A good running back should be good at just about anything. Tight end in particular, and quarterback. If you have a quarterback that can run, he can make zone or power schemes better. He can become the runner. He can become a backside constraint. I guess those are the two main options. So if your quarterback can be a runner, then your any whichever direction you go can be bolstered in a very helpful way. You need either your quarterback to be able to do that or for your tight end to be good at the blocks that are essential. If one of those two things is not the case, then really for zone or gap schemes, you're in big trouble.
Yeah. Ready to rock?
I am ready. I think there's more to be said about that, but we will come back to it.
Yeah, because I was very much keyed in and paying a ton of attention to that. I apologize. All right, so Juan Davis gets motioned into the box here. We're going to pay attention to our guard pulling, Hayden Connor. He pulls. So we have Helm here too. So we're in 12. He's just going to take, I think he's going to take the end immediately. Let's see what we do here. Okay. Hayden Connor is going to come take the end.
This is, I would call this a trap play, which I would classify as a gap scheme, but it's not really counter or power as we've explained them.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Yeah, it is. Because this is down. This is down block. This is counter. It's just the thing.
Counter trap, you could almost call it.
What's hard with it is because it's in 12, so it looks a little sketchy there. But if you look, take Gunnar Helm kind of out of it.
They would do it just like this without the second puller.
Yeah.
As well.
So you're going to watch Hayden Connor come around. He's going to get this end right here. Davis is going to come up.
You can watch. He throws a Gunnar Helm block. I just want to make good contact and screen him. I'm not looking to hurt anybody.
And then Trey's able to keep going for a couple yards.
You got that end zone cam?
I do. All right. We'll see it more clearly here. He's going to motion in Juan Davis.
You got Cole Hudson in there too.
Yep, Cole Hudson there.
They get a great double team there.
But see Hayden Connor as well. Doesn't have to do much here, right? The D end kind of takes himself out of the play.
Yep.
So that's fine. Let him do that. And then
good.
Well, and theoretically, Juan Davis is going to come up and block this linebacker, but this linebacker triggers, and so Cam's going to end up taking the linebacker. Mm. And then when that happens, Juan Davis is kind of confused now, so he's looking. Maybe the safety comes, whatever, but Wisner sees that there's a cutback here, but my guess is this backside player right here is going to make the play. Let's see. Yep.
Caleb Downs.
Yeah, is that number two? He moves like it's Caleb Downs.
The problem here is the problem everyone had with Ohio State last year and that everyone may have again next year with Ohio State is that they would play Downs back as like a middle linebacker with depth. And Texas has a double team that could have blocked up to him, and they have a fullback leading who could have blocked up to him, and nobody touches him, and he hits the running back. That's the trick with these. That's like the trick with the flyover too, is when that off-ball guy is so far back, but then he can get there fast, is that your box players, they either don't account for him in the scheme,
right,
or they do account for him, but he's hard to find.
Yep.
And he's hard to hit in space, and then he just zips in and limits your play.
It's one of those like whiteboard blocks. You're like, theoretically he's blocked, but almost in practice it can never work. But that's counter. And it's not perfect, but that's an example of counter versus Ohio State.
Still pretty good.
Not a bad amount of gain. Let's see what we got here.
Looks like duo.
Let's see.
No, it's not duo.
It's not duo.
The heck is this?
It's
oh, it's counter.
It's counter. Yeah, we ran it like three times. And so I was like expecting to find it easily last night.
See, Hayden Connor again. This is the trick with counter is that they'll start having the defensive end ride inside.
He'll surf.
And make himself impossible to kick out, which is fine. The ball can still go outside. But if the ball goes outside, you're not hitting as hard and fast downhill. And those other players have a chance to scrape over and stuff it.
Yep.
So it becomes imperative first that Hayden Connor rides him inside and doesn't let him like get into the backfield or blow up the angles too bad. And Connor does a good job of that. So the kind of thing that Connor was always good at.
And this is what too, for like, this is what playing the run looks like, right? I think fans think defensive ends are like always just like trying to get a sack, you know? And it's like, you see here that he identifies run. Why is this tackle down blocking away from me? As soon as a tackle or anyone's down blocking away from me, the first thing I'm doing is riding the line. Kirby Smart, he taught it, the concept when I learned it, but they're surfing, right? They're staying on that down block's hip and they're staying flat to the line. And like you said right there, so surfing, following, he's expecting, he knows that a puller is going to come. He stays right there. He takes on the puller. Connor does a good job with it. Helm comes up, gets zero, checks him out. And then right here, there's a potential for Trey to sneak out right here for a run, but I think he trips up. He gets tripped up somehow, and he starts falling forward right there.
Yeah. That gunner helm block is essential. So when they when the defensive end is able to spill the ball outside like that, now your guy pulling around has to find the player and open up either that inside cut lane or an outside bounce for your running back. And he has to make a quick decision, and it needs to be good, and he needs to make it.
Yeah, and also, you'll hear it described too as like the most dangerous man as well, like attacking the most dangerous man. But it's good there. Cam, I think Cam does a good job with this front side linebacker.
Now, the problem here is that they're outnumbered. Cam does an amazing job of getting to that guy. This is why he's going to be maybe first round draft pick.
Yeah, his movement here to not have that linebacker just run right around him is pretty impressive. And yeah, there's a chance for a bigger run. Caleb's up here lurking.
This is why last year's Texas team was like the offensive line was really underrated last year. Usually the run game is just a function of how good your line was. And there were some games where the line wasn't particularly great. You see a play like this, though. There's like two in a row, isn't it? Where they have a very difficult team blocked up really well, and they just don't have that much to show for it at the end.
Yeah. Under-maximized.
The receiving core, too.
Yeah. All right, so this is one. This is the one where it just gets completely blown up. Let's look here.
Is it counter again? It's counter again.
Yeah, it's counter. And what you'll notice here too is this three technique right here is like immediately notice the guard's pulling and he just collapses in and he blows up the play. It's a good play.
That's the trick.
Yeah.
There are some teams where you do not want to run it away from the three technique.
Yeah.
But that can be tricky based on how the defense aligns. So.
And you'll see, you know, he pulls. Majors has to be responsible for him, but he's just more athletic, and he's able to get that first step. So Majors is going to be late here. Boom. And Kelvin Banks theoretically helps here with, like, he taps him. There you go, man. So he tries to chip him a little bit to help, but he's focused on 44. This guy's going to break through the line. When he breaks through the line, he kind of – well, he doesn't slow Helm down too much, but he breaks through the line there, makes it really ugly.
He still has his hands free.
Well, if you'll notice,
that's not even the main problem, though, actually.
Look here. So what happens is no one picks up this nickel blitz. So yeah, here's the nickel blitz up top from this angle. You can see it better. The nickel just fires in. And if you see, Helm doesn't even try to take him.
Neither does Connor.
Right. And so they're just not – they didn't – first off, how are they – they're going to struggle to see this nickel blitz because it's on the opposite side of them. But once it comes to man most dangerous, Helm has to know right there because Connor's taking the end that ends up taking the end that he's got to take that nickel. Because if no one takes that nickel, you're going to see the nickel's going to blow up the play, and he does.
Does Cam go for the play side line? He's going for the backside. Yeah. So it's just an extra man. This is where you need the RPO. This is where you need the RPO to control the nickel, because it's not that realistic for your front to do it. Do they have an RPO?
No.
Oh, they have a wide open slant over the
middle. Running double slants up top, and nothing. No one identifies it, because the quarterback also doesn't identify that there's a nickel blitz.
Why not?
The quarterback doesn't identify it. The right tackle doesn't identify it. No one identifies it.
But why isn't he reading the RPO? Can you go back to the end zone, Cam? Like, what is Quinn looking at here?
Maybe I can
just play this. I just want to see this angle.
Well, I think I can expand it to
get playing to, Connor.
I think I can get more pre-snap for you to give you more what he's looking at. Okay, so I remember. So something's on the field. Quinn goes and throws it off the field.
Oh my god.
He's looking at nothing.
Go ahead, let it go. No, he's looking. He doesn't throw it.
Well, because if he doesn't throw, he's going to get smacked in the mouth. Keeping the ball right there, he's going to get hit in the chin strap. Boom. Like that, he would get killed on that play.
Well, if you see that, you don't have to execute the whole thing. You just zip it.
Pull it up.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. But they're running double. Up top, the wide receivers are running double slants behind it. But that's just a play of the nickel gets fired in, completely blows it up. And then see right here, Connor takes the end, who surfs again, and it's playing the right technique. Connor takes him. Helm right here has to decide nickel. But for whatever reason, he doesn't. Goes right by him and then tries to work up to downs. And the nickel just blows the play up.
Well, I think if you can't hit him, if you realize and you can't hit him, you're better off going and hitting the next guy. So then if your running back is able to make something magical happen, then now he's like running like free down the field.
Yeah.
So it doesn't do any good to turn around and watch. And then somebody else, then like your running back makes an amazing play and breaks a tackle. And then while you're watching, the next guy comes in and makes the tackle before you get
it. Well, it's just like profound that like no one notices. It's like the nickel doesn't even exist. Like he's a ghost, you know, like the tight end doesn't pay attention. Quarterback doesn't, right tackle doesn't call it. Like no one calls it. I don't even think let's see if a receiver calls it. Who the slot should call this right here. Nothing. I mean, there's nobody calls it. So that's weird. So this is going to be really blurry, but I want to show you a great example. This is Jake Franklin showing a good example of Philadelphia blowing up a kick block here. So this is what on the defensive side, this is what you want to do whenever that guard pulls. 65 is going to pull here. Pay attention to this player. Boom. And that's how you blow it up. And so 10 runs right into the arms right there. But see, he totally clogs that lane that running back is going to run through.
Somebody unblocked backside too. What happened there?
Let's see.
That's the bigger problem. I mean, that's an awesome play on that pull, but they totally – the play side – they don't block the play side defensive tackle. That's it. You're not going to do very well when that happens.
Yep. But mostly, just is what you want to see from. So this is where it goes wrong, right? Campbell or Neto pulls. You get a defensive end that's very much game, that you know it's going in that B gap, and then boom, that defensive end knocks you back into the B gap like that. That's one way you can crush this play. So we want to be wary right there. That body is now in front of the running back where he'd be going. Disregard that this defensive tackle is clearly right there too. The point is, that B guy can get broken. So what you want to pay attention to is big run-stopping defensive ends that a lot of pop and then like to meet pullers can give you problems potentially. But that's how you play it well from the defensive side of the ball.
I had to spend a lot of time explaining this in the offseason after 2021 because Texas was abysmal at doing this at edge in 2021 with a Gofu and
Ben Davis.
Yeah, he didn't even play barely. Yeah. Once Jacoby Jones was injured,
it was over for us.
It was over. They had nobody that could do it. And so like all into 2022, I was like, this is how you're supposed to play counter. This is how PK wants to play counter, which is like how you're showing up here. Which is when you're unblocked and you're in the backfield, you got to know that guy's coming for you.
Yeah.
You go find him and you hit him as deep in the backfield as you can with everything you just said. And then you blow up all the angles. And they did it way better in 2022. And it has not been a problem since.
Yeah. And on the inverse, you watch our defense, right? You want to see Colin Simmons doing that. Colin Simmons has both ways. Colin Simmons fast enough to run and hit you under the chin. Colin Simmons can also Olay these guards. Yeah, like I've seen the guards try to come get him. He'll jump and then go right back because he has that pass rush ability, right? So that guy's running right at him. He'll just juke him and then end up somehow behind the guard, like he's teleporting. So for our guys too,
he does whatever he wants.
He does exactly. He's one of those rule breakers that you're like, you can teach technique and all that stuff, but it doesn't. He can do things beyond your teach tape. And but this is the flip side, right? Whenever you see those guards pull, I want you to think power. And then when we're on defense and you see another team guard pull against us, I want you to be looking for that defensive end to meet that blocker and try to blow that play up. Because it's not fun. Edges and linebackers do not like have a full steam 6'7", 315-pound guy running at you. It's a gut check every single time. Power, counter. But, yeah, there's very few examples versus Ohio State. A couple of them went well. One of them did not go well. It is what it is. Are you excited for this development, Ian?
I'm extremely excited. But for one more detail that we haven't talked about yet.
Okay.
Which is we just showed a bunch of plays on counter where the tight end maybe doesn't have to kill somebody, but he has to be smart and he has to block the right guy, you know, and make good contact. And that is actually a problem for this team next year. Because, like, what tight end do you trust on this roster to do that?
Well, Jordan Washington also had a little shoulder something too, so he's out for a little bit. I don't know how serious it is.
But all the most essential guys are getting hurt, right?
Right. So, like, Jordan Washington, someone who needs a lot of reps here, is not able to get all the reps he could get. I don't know how long he's out. I'm not reporting anything. But
that's not too bad, I don't think. But still, it's the full pad reps that are essential where you're doing this.
Right? It's this one. This is a good block by Helm, right?
It's not that hard of a block because the guy's alignment makes it a pretty easy. But it's still
this good. Is what we need you to be able to do.
Yeah.
And watch. So right now, Spencer Shannon's getting all the reps, and Eric has said, and he said it again this morning, that like tight end is going to be solved in the portal, which is good.
Yeah, they could find tight ends that can do this in the portal, probably. But there's another solution, Connor.
What?
You know what else you can do?
10 personnel, baby. Who cares?
Well, even setting aside the personnel.
Yeah.
How can you run gap schemes without asking the tight end to really do anything?
I don't know. Talking about a quarterback read off of it.
Down a read, baby.
I was going to say, quarterback read off of it.
You show me like a counter. Show me like a diagram that I did a counter.
Yeah, this is when it gets a little bit scary for teams. Counter.
So here's the counter. You got the guard pulls around and kicks out. The tight end pulls around and leads. What if the tight end is out in space running a route? And the backside tackle is the guy that pulls and lead blocks. And you handle the end by having the quarterback watch him and pull the ball around the edge if he chases the running back.
So you leave the end at the top of the screen unblocked here?
Yeah, you would probably run it the other direction, I guess. So the quarterback can look at the guy on the same side that he's handing to.
So you have the end at the bottom of your screen here, and then Arch, then at that point, you don't have to block him. You can read him like a zone read, right?
If you read him like his own read.
Yeah, you read him like his own read. And if he does, if he goes after the back, well, then now Arch gets to run.
The quarterback blocks the defensive end.
Yep. Without actually blocking him.
Yeah. And you only need to run it a couple times.
Correct.
Before teams, you could be like, well, won't teams make Arch keep the ball and then tackle him a bunch of times and get a bunch of hits? Probably not. Because GT counter read is extremely hard to defend by doing that. Because they're pulling two blockers to the other side of the field. And if you try to fool the quarterback into keeping the ball and then keep defenders in position to hit him, then now you have nobody running to the other side. And the running back makes a guy miss, or they play a little simple game on you, and they are just like off to the races with their normal run game. So like Lincoln Riley, this is like Lincoln Riley's favorite play. And he would run it with Spencer Rattler, Baker Mayfield, Caleb Williams, and most of the time the quarterback never even had to run the ball. Texas ran this with Shane Buechele, and none of you guys even knew it, because Shane Buechele barely ever had to keep the ball. It's pretty brutal, and Arch is way more dangerous of a runner than anyone I just mentioned except Caleb Williams. So, yeah.
But this is why this play is so fun, because you have, like we said in the beginning, you have a play action element. We saw how those linebackers and even safeties get sucked into the run fit. So now you can throw things over the top. That's really big. And if you can just get a safety to take one wrong step forward and you got a fast receiver, that's huge too. Then on top of that, you've got these RPOs that we saw that one play with Arch where he's looking out while he's doing it. He doesn't throw it, but it's there, right? So now you have a play action element. You have an RPO element. Then you, of course, can just do the classic run like we saw. But now you're introducing Arch, like Ian said, and now you potentially have a quarterback pull off of that. So one scheme, four different things can happen from that scheme, and all of those are going to freaking stress defenses out, and eventually they're going to mismatch and they're going to play it the wrong way, and you're going to have your advantage.
This will be my next article. I'll go into greater detail on the GT counter. But, yeah, it's an amazing play. I think it was a game changer for Lincoln Riley in Oklahoma, because your three key blocks are executed by your guard, your tackle, and your quarterback. And so, like, for Riley, it's like our tight end does not need to be a blocker anymore. So now we could run power run schemes down your throat while flexing out the tight end and spreading you out with like Mark Andrews or just another receiver.
He's running Y cross right down the field.
Y cross, or he can do like, he can play a fullback like Dimitri Flowers and run this, but then Dimitri Flowers doesn't block. He's just like screaming down the field.
Yep.
Play action when you thought he was going to block. And like they torched when Baker Mayfield planted the flag on the field in Columbus. They ran GT counter play action to the fullback, pop throws over the middle, and they hit that guy like nine times for 120 yards and two touchdowns or something, and just cooked Ohio State on it. And it's just so much. I think to me that was like the essence of power raid. And TCU, when they went to the national championship, they were doing this too. Power raid, where you have like, you can run like four wide receiver sets and just spread them out so bad, but then be running power schemes with guard tackle in your face, and it just totally overstresses defenses. It's still, you watch USC now, and their problems do not relate to the efficacy of that scheme. It still chews people up.
Yeah, that's it. That's what Riley's schemes are awesome about. So how does this work with our current tight end? We're going to get another tight end, but does this scheme work at all with our current kind of tight end situation? If you don't,
they can't run it with Shannon. I don't think he's good enough off the ball. They could probably run it with Ridge Barker.
The legend. Then
Ridge Barker becomes an extremely important part of your offense.
Correct.
and that's not great. They can get guys in the portal to do it, but you know it would be even easier than that? It's majoring more in GT counter and zone read where your tight end doesn't have to block. And now you can still go get tight ends from the portal, but they don't even have to be that good at blocking. It doesn't matter, you know?
And then you have Arch quotas a runner, but really you only have to run them once or twice a game to keep them honest. So it's like you're not even really having to run.
Yeah. Arch. If they do this, and we'll see, but they're going to do this. When they do this, it is really a sea change on offense for them. And they might go back to the old way in the future, but Sark has always been like, we're going to have big tight ends that block, and they're going to block for us, and that's how we're going to make this work. We're not going to use the quarterback like this.
Right.
But Arch can do this, and KJ Lacy can do this, and Dia Bell can do this. So we'll see if this triggers like a major shift in philosophy from Sark or not. I think it might.
That's what I've always found interesting with Sark, because Sark will say the more things you do, the more difficult it is to defend you. But then he would also rule out the quarterback run. And so like that was always kind of like a conflict I saw philosophically. He does every other thing under the sun. So if you like do credible quarterback running and not just like a zone read in the red zone every now and again, I think you have if not the most full offense, full playbook in college football. If you want to start running your quarterback legit style, not legit style, but you get what I'm saying, as a threat.
It's also like, if you want to sell that we prepare our quarterbacks for the NFL is getting it a lot more involved in this too.
Well, change the numbers, man. Like quarterback run stresses teams out. It matters. As a chess piece, it matters. And like you said, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to run them. It just, you have to make them think that it can happen. And that's where you'll get them. But we've saw it with Arch. Arch can run. What was I reading? Some article of some Big 12 coach, anonymous coach, was talking about Arch.
Really?
Yeah, and he was saying, whenever I saw him do this run, maybe the UTSA run, he was like, oh, yeah, this kid's going to be a Heisman. Because he like said he knew he was big. He knew he could pass. But when he took off and ran like that, that one where he almost scored at the end of it, he was like, okay, well, this is not good for everybody else. All right. That was fun. I always like talking scheme, dude. Yeah. Shout out power runs. Hope you guys understand power running better. The key lesson as a fan, if you see that guard pull, you probably know what's up. Ian.
Eventually, we'll get into duo, which breaks these rules and is.
Yeah, that's why I didn't want to touch duo at all.
That's another hour.
Yeah, that's another scheme. All right, Ian, thank you so much for your time. Fans, thank you guys as always. And we will see you tomorrow. Peace out, y'all. And this was brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors.